as you can see. My name is Charles, and I'm going to talk, about interface flows in D1, D5 holography. First, I'd like to say just a couple words about why we should be looking at interface or defect flows at all. So first, I'd like to start out with a couple comments about the Kondo effect. The Kondo effect is essentially the first application, the first appearance of defect flows in physics, and it had very important experimental implications. So if you look at a conducting material at low temperature, then as you send the temperature to zero, one of two things typically happens. One possibility is that the resistivity approaches some finite non-zero value, but it decreases monotonically towards that value. And the second standard possibility is that you hit a phase transition and it enters a superconducting phase, and you end up with zero conductivity. In the 1930s, however, it was discovered that some materials actually exhibited an anomalous increase in conductivity at sufficiently low temperatures, giving some kind of profile like this. And it was Kondo in the 1960s who provided an explanation for why this effect occurs. So it turns out that the samples that people were looking at had magnetic spin impurities, heavy impurities in them. And while these didn't have an appreciable effect in the ultraviolet, as you went to the infrared, you could end up with strong coupling between the spin impurities and the conduction electrons. So in the UV, the conduction electrons would basically ignore the impurity, but in the infrared, you could get binding of conduction electrons to the impurity. And the basic effect of this would be to screen the impurity, consequence of this was contributions from scattering with the impurity, which actually led to the anomalous increase in the resistivity. So the basic setup looking at this phenomenon starts with Kondo's Hamiltonian, and it's just a bunch of free electrons coupled to some spin impurity. So in general, one may want to look at coupling to some spin impurity of general spin. In the original system, he considered configurations where you had spin 1/2 impurities. So of course, here we have the free fermion kinetic term, and here we have a coupling between the spin impurity and the electron spin with some coupling G. And there's a nice way to describe the Kondo effect in terms of CFT, which was developed by Affleck and Ludwig. I thought I cited them. Ah, there we are. Yes, Affleck and Ludwig, in which they noted that since the only modes contributing to scattering are S-wave modes, you can do an effective reduction of your 3+1 dimensional system to a 1+1 dimensional system. So if you zoom in on the Fermi surface, you can rewrite the system as a two-dimensional free CFT together with a coupling of that two-dimensional CFT to the spin. Now in this configuration, you have a CFT in the half space because the x coordinate here was your original radial coordinate away from the impurity. And therefore, you impose some boundary condition you have to impose a boundary condition on the fields at this point. So in the UV, the behavior is determined by this boundary condition, but this additional coupling here leads to a boundary flow. And this boundary, so by studying this boundary flow, one can compute contributions to the resistivity. I'll just comment briefly that in this type of setup here, we can replace model on the half space via the unfolding trick by a model on the real line coupled to some type of of defect. Now, in the CFT description of the Kondo effect, it's actually straightforward to generalize the setup slightly. So in the original Hamiltonian, the original system that I've written here, can be understood as a special case of an SU2 Wessel-Meno-Witten model. And for those who aren't familiar with these types of things, this is just a nonlinear sigma model on the three-sphere, which is made conformal by adding units of H-flux, which in sort of more standard field theory language just corresponds to a Wessel-Meno term. Now, in this type of model, you have a collection of conformal boundary conditions which are particularly symmetric. They preserve one of the chiral copies of the SU2K chiral algebra that live in the CFT. And these are classified by their spin J, which has to satisfy the property that J has to be between 0 and K over 2. And they have a simple geometric interpretation. So the allowed conformal boundary conditions actually have Neumann conditions. So you have an embedding into S3. And on the boundary of the CFT, you have Neumann boundary conditions along an S2 and Dirichlet conditions transverse to it. And this S2 is located at a particular value of theta, which is 2 pi j over k. So you have a finite number of values at which locations at which these boundary conditions, these brains, can be located. So the particularly simple ones you can get by looking at j equals 0 or at j equals k, which lands you on either pole, and those correspond to zero-dimensional locus in the three sphere. And of course, these others give you a non-trivial sphere.
Is J not the same as the J of the Kondo? But they come in theory.
Yes, it is.
Shouldn't that actually supposed to add a spin J representation on top of the
system? So the J, I haven't yet gotten to talking about the Kondo impurities yet. Okay, so this is just boundary conditions. Now if you look at these classes of boundary conditions, then you can study flows between different types of boundary conditions. So if we start in a situation where we have a collection of these D0 brains located at the pole, that gives us an additional contribution to the Hilbert space. It's 2J plus 1 dimensional. And we can add we can then write down a spin operator in spin J, and we can couple such a spin operator to our system. In the boundary state language, this results in a non-abelian polarization of the brain state. And the end result of the flow is that these D0 brains puff up into a D2 brain configuration. And this value J here is the same as the original value of J here. So here you end up with at least partial defect screening, but you get as you were saying, you absorb this spin, and you can compute in the Kondo context in the context of the Kondo effect. You can compute the effect of this RG flow in terms of the absorption of boundary spin principle, where you can classify it purely by the representation theory, of your spin defect. Yes.
So the J of the left, you can have to be smaller than K. What happens if J is very large?
Right. So if you have a large spin, if you have a spin which violates this bound, then you end up in the overscreen case. And in the overscreen case, it doesn't have a simple description in terms of So in the original conduit picture, for example, if we introduced a defect with spin greater than 1/2, then you would not end up in the infrared with a simple description in terms of a Fermi liquid.
You must still have some direct sum of figure lines, or lines, so in the infrared.
Frankly, I'm not sure. I'm not familiar with the details of the overscreen case. Okay. So here we've been talking about boundaries. Now there is a way to rephrase all of these Kondo flows nicely, purely in terms of defects. And this follows a construction made by Gabadiel and Bacchus. And what they did is they considered the case. So now instead of looking at a CFT in a half space, we now look at a CFT on the entire plane. And we include an operator of this sort. So it looks kind of like a Wilson line, except that we're not inserting a gauge field A here, we're inserting a current J. So here we have a trace over the 2J plus 1 dimensional Hilbert space associated to the spin, and the spin operator is coupled inside the exponential to this current operator. Now this current operator is not the global current operator, this is one of the chiral currents. Chiral SU2 currents of the Wessel-Meno-Witten model. You can choose either one. So in this case, we have a defect defined by a coupling G. This coupling G is marginally relevant. And as a result, this defect experiences a flow. Now the nice thing about this defect is that as you move it towards a boundary, which preserves an entire copy of the SU2 chiral algebra, there are no singularities, and you can freely move it around without causing complications. And in particular, you can generate a boundary flow by starting with a boundary here and this defect here, and then you just move the defect on top of the boundary. So this allows you to understand the Kondo effect by studying these interface flows. And this is an example of a particularly interesting class of interface flows that one can study. And this can be generalized also to things like coset, which was done by, I guess, Schoenebels and Fadenhagen. Right. And the geometric picture for these flows has a similar type of picture to this non-abelian polarization that we saw in the case of the boundary states. So after this introduction, I want to mention the goal for the rest of the talk. And that's basically what we were interested in doing was looking at a simple top-down situation in holography where we can study specific properties of defect RG flows, which share some of the characteristics of Kondo flows, at least from a geometric perspective. That will be the focus for the rest of the talk. The D1, D5 CFT is a particularly well-known, well-understood holographic dual, and so that's the one we decided to focus. So, what is the simplest type of interface that you can write down in a D1, D5 system? Well, first of all, let me just briefly review what the D1, D5 system looks like. So you start with type 2B string theory on a TAN manifold, which is given by two-dimensional Minkowski space, which is where the CFT will live, four-dimensional Euclidean space, which are the transverse directions to the brains, and a four-dimensional Kagabayau manifold, meaning it's either K3 or T4. Now we take N1, D1 brains, and we put them on the Minkowski space, and we take N5, D5 brains, and we put them on the Minkowski space, but we also wrap them on this compact manifold. Now, of course, D brains are described, the infrared dynamics of D brains is described by non-abelian gauge theories. And in this particular case, the infrared dynamics is described by a two-dimensional gauge theory, which has 4,4 supersymmetry. Now, if you want to look at the gauge theory description, then you can start, so of course, in this case, we have a U of N1 cross U of N5 gauge theory. And the string stretched between these two brains constitutes a bifundamental hypermultiplet. In general, to get a well-behaved CFT, you have to turn on non-singular CFT, you have to turn on Phi Eliopoulos parameters, and that pushes you onto the Higgs branch. Now, you can, did I say something odd? Oh, never mind. So one way to interpret the movement onto the Higgs branch is the expectation value for these hypermultiplets describes the dissolution of the D1 brains inside the D5 brains. So if you look at the D5 brain world volume theory, then it has this coupling between C2, that's the RR field under which D1 brains are charged, and trace of edge F wedge F, which is the instanton density on the D5 world volume. So of course that means that a D1 brain lying on the D5 brain world volume can be replaced by a localized, a small instanton, and it can be dissolved as gauge instantons, is gauge instantons on M4. And the potential in this theory vanishes if you are on self-dual field configurations or more generally on a deformation of the self-dual condition. And as a result, in the infrared, the theory becomes localized on a deformation of the moduli space of instantons in M4. So this is the particular 2D CFT we're interested in understanding. Whose interfaces we're interested in. Okay, now in a setup like this, what's the simplest type of defect that you can write down in, say, a gauge theory like this? Well, you can write down Wilson lines. So we can start, we can introduce a collection of P fundamental strings, which intersect the D1, D5 system. So here I just have them going through to the D1, D5 system. Of course, since F1s are allowed, fundamental strings are allowed to end on D brains, we can also take half of this and move it off to infinity, and we're left with a half infinite fundamental string. Regardless of which of these you do, you preserve n equals 4, d equals 1 supersymmetry, so that's four supercharges. In the conformal limit, you get, of course, 8 superconformal charges. And if the string ends here, then in the gauge theory description, as I said, you have a Wilson line. So that means that it sources a jump in the background electric field that defines the nonlinear sigma model. And that changes the CFT on one side. So over here, for example, we have no electric field. Over here, we have a non-vanishing electric field. So that means we have a different CFT on both sides. However, the central charge of those CFTs is the same. In particular, if it ends, then we have an interface, not a defect, because the two sides are different. There's a simple generalization that we can consider. So, of course, we're also free in a D1, D5 background to add D1 brains. They can be parallel to the original D1, D5 system. But we can also consider bound PQ strings, which are bound states of P fundamental strings and Q D1 brains. So such a configuration will preserve the same supersymmetries as the original D1, D5 system with fundamental string defects, as long as the orientation satisfies an appropriate condition, which is determined by the value of P and Q and the string coupling. In general, it depends also on the axion, but I'm setting that equal to zero for simplicity. Now, in this case, of course, we can simply cross the CFT, we are also allowed to have these end on this configuration. And since, of course, this carries D1 charge, that means that while over here we'll have one value of D1 charge, over here the value of D1 charge will be enhanced by the value Q. So in that case, we're looking at a defect which not only changes the CFT, but which also changes the central charge. Okay.
These are not going to be chiral defects.
These are not what?
These are not going to be chiral defects, so we have to go
They're not chiral defects. I mean, it would be nice to look at chiral defects, but we thought about that for a while, but it seems difficult to realize them in holography, except I might make a couple comments at the very end. okay, so far I talked about these brain configurations. Let me briefly talk about the holographic setup. So the gravitational dual of the D1, D5 system this is, of course, the ADS-CFT duality, which states that type 2B string theory on an appropriate background is equivalent to this D1D5 CFT, which is where the D1D5 system flows at large distances. The particular geometry that type 2B string theory lives on is the near horizon limit of the original geometry, which is given by ADS3 cross S3 cross the manifold M4. And of course, in this case, the ADS3 and the S3 both have to be supported by something. In this case, they're supported by Ramond-Ramond three-form flux. The symmetries in this case are the symmetries you would expect. You get the n=4,4 small superconformal algebra, whose bosonic part is SO22 cross SO4. Now, if we add one of these PQ defects, then in the infrared limit, the defect is conformal, and it preserves this maximal subalgebra, which consists of SO21 cross SU2, and in addition, we have 8 superconformal symmetries, which are realized as killing spinners on this background. Okay, so our background geometry is this. In the limit where the string coupling is sufficiently small that we can ignore the back reaction, we can describe the effect of this defect brain in terms of just an embedding of a PQ brain inside this background geometry. So here we have PQ, this brain extends along the time direction, it extends along the ADS radial direction, and if Q is not equal to zero, then it has a non-trivial profile along the X direction, along the CFT direction. The effect of these interfaces in the holographic dual are then determined The properties of these brains are determined by the DBI Tron-Simons action in this particular background. So in our case, what we're going to be looking at, so we have Q D1 brains, we have P fundamental string, sorry, we have Q D1 charge, P units of fundamental string charge. And here we're looking at an abelian configuration, in which case the DBI Tron-Simons action simply takes this simple form. And in this case, the fundamental string charge P is encoded in the electric field living on the brain. And it's straightforward to solve the equations of motion exactly in a general background. So here, for reference, this is actually the solution in the asymptotically flat geometry, and you get the PQ string solutions by taking the near horizon limit of this solution. So you can see in particular that asymptotically the picture looks the same as the picture we wrote previously, but now we have some non-trivial profile as we approach the D3 bins. okay. So now what we're really interested in studying is something about flows. So we're going to start with flows where we deform these brains by a non-abelian. We give these brains a non-abelian polarization. Yes. Yes. Right. So this picture isn't, and that's because it's the asymptotically flat regime. And if you go to the New Horizon limit, then you do preserve exactly the desired symmetries. Okay. Where was I? Okay. Yes. So. As when we were looking at the Kondo effect, we're going to look at deforming the brains by non-abelian polarization. So what this means is that the coordinates on the three sphere, we now allow them to become non-commuting matrices. This is quite standard. So this type of deformation was I don't know if it was strictly first considered in the case of Myers, but probably. And in any event, when you turn on, if you allow the coordinates on the S3 to be non-commuting matrices, then the brain starts to puff up into surprise, a fuzzy S2. So if we're looking at a small number of D1 brains and we puff up slightly, then we should really be using the non-abelian DBI action. But if we have a sufficiently large number, then you can show that the non-abelian DBI action simply turns into the abelian DBI action for D3 brains. Yes?
The original was online, it was for 4.7.
Yes. So that's different from the Kondo case.
In terms of the circuit side, what is the deformation by fuzzy?
That's a good question, I'm not entirely satisfied with our understanding on the CFT side yet. We have various pictures in. So if you take a couple of T dualities and you view it as a D3 brain system, then you can start drawing. Well, we were going. You're Gaiota, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So we were using your paper with Witten on N equals 4 super Yang Mills, and you can draw pictures which the basic picture that we ended up with was that actually so if you take the if you take one of these brain configurations and you insert a D3 brain here, which in the dual picture turns into, sorry, it's a couple of T dualities and an S duality. So this thing is actually an NS5 brain. And then you can make some arguments that you can make some arguments about how things behave as you chop this half off and you move it away. But the problem we originally ran into was that we were trying to describe things purely in the U of N1, U of N5 gauge theory language, and we had trouble describing that exactly. So it may be more useful to look at things in the instanton language. But that's work in progress still.
But in the UV, does it go to something
with the Russell lines?
Does it go to what? In the UV, does it go to something? Does it look like that deformation of Wilson lines, or it's just a completely different starting point?
In the UV, it's just the Wilson line. So in particular, from the gauge theory point of view, it's going to be Wilson lines in tensor products of the fundamental rep.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's the Wilson lines.
Yeah. If you view it in the Wilson line picture, then this presumably corresponds to the same type of thing. In this case, I think it would be the anti-symmetric representation. But as I say, we're not entirely happy with our understanding of the CFT description. Okay. Okay, yes. So we can puff up the brains into fuzzy S2s, and you can describe the system either by the non-abelian DBI Trin-Simons action for one brains, or by the abelian one for three brains. And so we can find the BPS solutions for general values of P and Q by studying the properties of kappa symmetry along the lines of this paper here. I guess that's, is that your father on this paper? Yes. Right, and so I can just briefly comment. So if we consider the S dual of this system, then of course the S dual is supported not by RR flux, but by NS flux. And in that case, the system in which the puffing up is occurring, the string world sheet system in which the puffing up is occurring, is exactly the SU2 level N5 Wessum Witten model. So the RG flow for the interfaces that we're studying here are controlled by essentially the generalized Condor RG.
I don't understand this data.
Huh?
I don't understand this data. On the worksheet, you're usually supposed to use things like conformal bar, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. So in this case, what happens is that you look at a non-conformal invariant state, but now you correct it by coupling it to the Z field that lives in the ADS3. So presumably there's a way of looking at a general CFT like that and looking at a deformation and generating an RG flow in ADS. And that would probably be an interesting question to consider. This is a very special case. Okay. So this is our geometry. So now, whereas previously we were extended in the T and the ADS radial direction Z with some non-trivial profile in the X direction, now we're also extended along an S2 of the S3 inside ADS3 cross S3 cross N3. So here are the details of the DBI Chern-Simons action that are relevant to carrying out this computation. Here I'm putting, so here's a result when the D3 brains carry no D1 charge. So this is the puffing up of the pure fundamental string configuration. In this case, you have a configuration which can basically be derived from, obtained straightforwardly from results of this paper. In the general PQ case, it's more complicated. And you end up, so you have this critical value theta p, which is given by pi times p over n5. So we see the same picture that we had before, and p is telling us what the spin of the representation in the Kondo case was. So as has already been mentioned, this type of endpoint is closely related to the D5 brain realization of Wilson lines. In the case of n equals 4 superangulates. Okay. the interface flows that are considered here are ones that you can use to compute a number of different useful quantities. But it doesn't really take into account. So it takes into account the effect of the defects on the CFT, but it doesn't take into account. How the CFT affects itself under the influence of the defect. So it doesn't take into account corrections coming from the CFT itself. Those are encoded in gravitational back reactions, which means that optimally you would want to study the properties of these flows in the case where. You want to study the properties of these flows with the full back-reacted supergravity solution. In general, that's fairly difficult to do. So we decided to do something a little simpler, which was to study the properties of these defects at the fixed points and compare things which we know are connected by a defect RG flow. So fortunately, these people here, Chiodarelli and Gutperle and Klim, showed how to find the general supergravity solution under the following set of assumptions. So first of all, you want to preserve the bosonic, you want to preserve the symmetry algebra of such a supersymmetric defect. So that means you want to preserve 8 supersymmetries, and you want to preserve an SO of 2-1 cross SU2 bosonic symmetry. In addition, they assumed that there were no non-trivial field profiles along the M4 directions. the result is that you have, so those constraints, symmetry constraints, imply that your geometry is going to be a vibration of ADS2 cross S2 cross M4 over a Riemann surface, which is open. And these functions that live here, so since it's a vibration, the functions that live here depend only on the coordinates of the Riemann surface. So a simple thing that we can write down in that form had better be the vacuum, which is this object here. So we see that so here we have ADS3, and it's foliated by slices of ADS2. And these slices of ADS2 are parametrized by a coordinate rho. On the other hand, on the S3, we have slices of S2, which are parametrized by the coordinate theta. So in the particular case of the vacuum, that's where the coordinates come from. The general solution depends on a collection of harmonic functions and their duals, meaning that these are the real part of some holomorphic function and these are the imaginary part. So the brain solutions, the back-reacted brain solutions should have local singularities, and the singularity structure should match the singularity structure that you see in flat space. And they also should carry certain charges. So in order to find back-reacted brain solutions, you have to study these guys and determine the behaviors of the singularities, and you have to perform the appropriate charge match. So for example, if we a PQ string, which is located at theta equals zero. So here in this figure, we have the two sides of the CFT on the left and the right. The poles of the sphere are at the bottom and the top. And something which lives along this line here will live on the north pole of the S3. So if we put a PQ string here, then we can, for example, measure its D1 charge using an expression like this. okay, so for the PQ configurations, for the original configurations, we only need to consider things located at either the poles. On the other hand, after we've undergone an RG flow, we now have D3 brains, and that means that they have to have a local D3 brain charge, which is found as a monodromy in the integral of the four-form Ramond-Ramond potential over the internal manifold. This is written for T4, but you can do this for K3 as well. Okay. So in this case, so at some particular point of rho, we have this brain which lies in a particular value of rho, and it sits at the north pole of S. So this is a PQ string, and here we can see, so if we have CFT1, which has no fundamental string charge, and CFT2 will have P units fundamental string charge. So that's the F1 part of the charge matching condition. Now, when we undergo a...
What's the dilaton?
The dilaton it's like e to the minus 4 phi looks something like a u minus b b twiddle times a twiddle u twiddle minus, I don't quite remember, but it's something along these lines. It's determined in terms of these same harmonic functions anyway.
But it also has strong, it has, I guess I'm asking about the string coupling constant. Are there regions where it's strong?
It depends on what your values of P and Q are, but in general, yes. Yeah. Okay. Right. Thanks. Okay. So now if we look at the defect flows, then we want to start at some value of D1, we want to end at a D3 defect. Of course, when you perform an RG flow, the CFT has to remain unchanged. So that puts constraints on your solution. And you need to impose that all of the charges match. And it turns out that those conditions completely specify the gravitational solutions. And so that gives us explicit back-reacted solutions to type 2b supergravity, which is dual to this particular class of defects, of interfaces. All right. So what's the point? What's the point of looking at these sorts of back-reacted solutions? Well, the point is to take into account effects which are not visible, purely in the probe band description. And so a good example of that is the G factor, the interface entropy of these defects. So the boundary entropy is defined as log G, where the G factor can be understood as the overlap of, in the case of a boundary, it can be understood as the overlap of the boundary state with the vacuum. And interfaces can always be understood as boundaries of the folded theory. So you can also use G to understand, you can also define a G factor associated to any interface, conformal interface. Well, yeah. So for computing things in our solutions, it's actually convenient to express this in terms of entanglement entropy. So it turns out that there's a simple way of extracting the G factor from entanglement entropy. If you take your original, CFT and you have some defect, and you choose an entangling interval, which is arranged symmetrically around the defect, then you can extract the G factor. The G factor just gives it an additive factor to the entanglement entropy. And you can extract it straightforwardly. Now, in our case, of course, if we have a semi-classical gravitational dual, then we can compute the entanglement entropy using the Ryu-Takayanagi formula. So the Ryu-Takayanagi formula expresses the entanglement entropy as the so normally in ADS3 CFT2, it expresses it as the length of the geodesic, which attaches the two boundary points. Now, in our case, we have all of these internal manifolds, and you actually have to integrate over the internal manifolds as well. but if we want to understand the, so in order to compute the entanglement entropy, so we can view each of these signs. Each side of the defect is a copy of ADS2. And a symmetric interval is precisely one where we choose the same point in ADS2 for both sides. And as a result, the corresponding entangling region, the corresponding Ryu-Takayanagi surface will be the set of all points in the bulk whose coordinate on the ADS2 slices is constant. And you simply evaluate the area, the length of this geodesic, the area of this eight-dimensional surface. And so the grad student, Christian Nolte, computed this in closed form, and it's fairly complicated, but you can show that it indeed decreases as you perform the normalization group flow, as is required by the G theorem. And crucially, it does contain configurations. The general expression is quite different from the probe band description, and it contains contributions which are not computable in the probe band. Okay, so let me just briefly summarize and then make a few comments about other work. So here we studied holographic duals of interface RG flows in the D1, D5 CFT. So we studied it both from the point of view of probe band configurations for general values of P and Q. And we also computed the back-reacted supergravity configurations. So we applied these results on supergravity solutions, fine exact solutions to classical 2B supergravity, which represented the back-reacted band solutions. And using this, we could compute the G factor, the semi-classical, the G factor in the semi-classical limit And there are some other things that we've done which are not included in the talk. So an example is you can also look at other interfaces, for example, carrying D5 and NS5 trays. Now for things which are in progress, so in the context of the Kondo effect, you really want to understand finite temperature effects. So optimally, one wants to look at the behavior of flows at finite temperature, and that's an interesting question that should be addressed. Second one is, as we were mentioning earlier, it would be nice to have a more explicit and more detailed understanding of the CFT realization of these flows. We have a sort of schematic one, but it's not entirely satisfactory. A third thing that would be quite interesting to do would actually be to look at other top-down holographic theories. So an especially interesting one is ADS3 cross S3 cross S3 cross S1. So the holographic duality in this context, there are points in the moduli space which correspond to coset CFTs, where you actually do expect chiral defects to exist. And it would be very interesting to see if by studying interface flows of a similar type, perhaps in the same context, if one can get some insight into chiral defects in a holographic context. And that's all I have to say, so thank you. Okay.
Which is associated with the point from the plane.
Uh-huh.
And then a presentation of the group. Mm-hmm. So I think it also lies, as I said, intuitively should give you a line defect associated with this epitome of the bundle.
Okay.
I mean, a problem with the bundle, because for more purity, can give you either a thing or anything.
Okay.
Just sort of space feeling, this is, it's like a chunk of a bundle, it was a bundle.
It's like a what?
A chunk of a bundle.
Okay. Yeah.
That could be a place where.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Well, if I could talk to you about that some more later, that would be great.
Any more questions? So if not, Charles will be staying until 7:30.